You're listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks, your source for centered and focused play therapy coaching.
Hi, I'm Dr. Brenna Hicks, the kid counselor. This is the Play Therapy Podcast, where you get a masterclass in child-centered play therapy and practical support and application for your work with children and their families. In today's episode, we are moving on to a new section. So we wrapped up the filial section, and we are now moving into more advanced things to consider in the playroom. So this is going to be a pretty broad category, but it will allow us to dive into all kinds of different considerations when we are playing with kids, when we're looking at presenting problems, when we're looking at diagnoses, when we're looking at background of the child, when we're looking at things that are taking place in the playroom in real time. It'll just give us a really broad category in which we can kind of dive into more advanced discussion topics. And let me unpack the why here. You know how much I love that. So I think it's really important for us as child-centered play therapists to see the value and understand the importance of being able to handle anything that goes with child-centered play therapy. So, do we need the clinical skills? Yes, of course. Do we need to be knowledgeable and have the training and the education and feel that from a theoretical standpoint, we are very grounded and very informed and we know how to handle things clinically with skills? 100%. That's why this podcast exists. That's why the coaching programs exist. However, it goes so much far beyond that. And this is actually something I've been sharing with all of the play therapy professional certified participants lately. There are so many other things that are involved in being a child-centered play therapist that you're never going to get in a classroom, you're never going to get in curriculum, and you're never going to get if you focus on skills alone. So this category, where we're kind of moving into advanced discussion topics, all relate to being a child-centered play therapist, are all applicable for the things that we're going to face as we do this as a career. And we have to remember that we wear lots of hats as a child-centered play therapist. We wear even more hats if we're a private practitioner. But no matter in what environment you practice, as a child-centered play therapist, you are required to wear lots of hats and have lots of different jobs. So these are the types of things that you need to be knowledgeable about, aware of, and equipped to handle. And so those are the kinds of topics that we're going to dive into in this next round. Before I get into that, though, a couple of housekeeping things. First and foremost, if you haven't yet, go to playtherapynow.com and you can sign up for my newsletter. You can look at training opportunities and you can see everything that is going on in the world of child-centered play therapy that we are organizing at playtherapynow.com. Also, if you were not able to attend the CEU trainings that I've conducted with Corewell, they have pre-recorded options on their site permanently. So once I do a live recording, it becomes a pre-recorded option that is evergreen. So if you are in need of CEUs and you were not able to attend the live coaching, you can absolutely go, and it's cheaper to do the pre-recorded option and you'll still get the same number of CEUs. So as I add more trainings with them, you'll have more options, but right now there are two CEU courses that you can get and you'll be able to have those as non-contact or non-live CEUs. So just wanted to make you aware of that. So if you're interested in that, go to childcenteredtraining.com and you can access the trainings through that website. That's kind of a forwarding website, if you will, but it's through Corewell. So you can also go to Corewell's website to find those as well. All right. So here's the topic that I want to start with. Reverse Pandora's box. And I love the concept of this. And I think that this is so helpful in guiding our work and helping us understand what goes on for a child and for parents and what this looks like, practically speaking, for us as we're working with children. So think about Pandora's box as its original story and the concept that once the box was opened, it released all of these things that they didn't expect and they didn't want, but they couldn't shove them all back in the box, right? So it's almost like a be careful what you wish for kind of thing, because once the box was opened, everything was never able to be pushed back in and sealed. So almost too little too late, it's already out there and it can't be undone. Okay, so if we understand that as that mythological story, then it's very important for us to understand that the reverse is true in child-centered play therapy. And I tell this story to parents as we're looking at termination and we're talking through the final stages and phases of treatment with a child, because this is what inevitably will happen from the parent side and from the child side, and sometimes from our side. If the child shows regressive behavior in the playroom or at home, so something that we haven't seen them do in a very long time, we have not seen aggression, we have not seen a certain type of play thematically, we've not seen big tantrums or meltdowns at home or at school. If at any point any of that type of issue reemerges, the parent starts to get really worried. Sometimes we as the therapist can get really worried. And the child is kind of revisiting some old themes and some old play and some old default behaviors. So what we know is that reverse Pandora's box is true. So once a child goes through the child-centered play therapy process, once they've learned new coping skills, once they've developed new resilience, once they have understood that they have new tools and new skills, they have a different emotional vocabulary, they can self-regulate better than they used to, they communicate their needs in more effective ways, they behave in more self-enhancing ways. When all of these things have been gained, and that's not only individual work that every child goes through, but then there are the four universal outcomes, which are what, by the way? Yes, I believe in you. I'm sure all of you yelled them out to me. So we have increased worldview, we have increased regulation, we have increased emotional vocabulary, and we have increased self-esteem. So you swirl all of that together, the universal outcomes, all of the individual things that a child has gained, what we know a child masters in the child-centered playroom. So self-confidence and self-regulation, self-control, vocabulary, all of these things. Not to mention coping and resilience and problem solving and trusting themselves, and the list goes on and on, right? They can't unlearn those things. They can't undo those things. They can't pretend that they didn't acquire them and that they don't exist. So reverse Pandora's box implies that once they have learned, acquired, developed, grown, changed, healed, all of those things, even if we see regression, even if we see an uptick in earlier struggles, behaviors, presenting issues, whatever, it does not mean that we're starting back at square one. And this is often one of a parent's greatest fears, is they have to keep coming to therapy. You become the crutch. You become the security blanket. You become the way that they ensure that, quote, I can't go back to where we were before, end quote. And the lovely response that we can give is, that's not even possible. You'll never go back to where you were before because of all the things your child has learned and acquired, and they can never unlearn and unacquire those things. So do we sometimes see that they default back to earlier patterns? Sure. Do we sometimes see a little uptick in behaviors we hadn't seen in a while? Of course. That doesn't mean that we're backsliding. It doesn't mean that we're regressing. It doesn't mean we're going back to ground zero. Here's what typically is happening. A child revisits old patterns of behavior because they want to see what it feels like. This used to serve me. This used to meet my needs. This used to be a means to an end. This used to be the only way that I knew how to handle things. It was my default. So let me default back to this and just see what it's like and if it still is the same as it used to. And what they find very, very quickly is this doesn't do what it used to do for me. I have better coping now. I have new tools. I handle things differently now. I don't react that way anymore. I self-control more than I was able to before. So they kind of go back, see what it's like, and then they very quickly climb out of that. So sometimes it can be scary for us too, or not necessarily scary, but we can be a little bit alarmed or surprised or concerned where we're going, oh my word, why are we back to this again? Why is he doing this again? Why are they having issues at school again? Why is he freaking out at home? Did this not work? Does this mean that we're backsliding? We can start to question the whole thing. But what we need to remember is this is very normal. It's very common. And if we can reassure parents that when kids revisit old behaviors and old patterns, they realize that they don't need to do those things anymore because they are equipped in different ways. So when we watch that shift back and forth, it's usually very short-lived and it's reverse Pandora's box. They can't forget all the things that they have figured out. So we have to trust the process as always. We have to trust the child as always. We have to help the parent feel reassured and that they can trust and believe that everything is still just as good as it was before we saw the regressive type of behavior. Because in the grand scheme of things, what the child is doing is testing out if what their old patterns were are going to be worth preserving. And the answer is no. They only used that before because they didn't have alternatives, but they have alternatives now. So once they realize it no longer functions the way that it used to, they're able to move on from it. And that is their checks and balances. They go back, they see what it's like, they realize they don't want it, and they're able to move on. And that's when you know that the child has truly integrated all of their new skills and tools and awareness, because once they've proven that they don't need it anymore, they typically don't keep going back to revisit it. But they have to, at least to make sure that they can close that chapter out. Because remember, kids never choose to stay stuck. So if a child is behaving in self-defeating ways and is coping maladaptively, we know that they don't want to. So when they revert back to those behaviors, it's not because they want to be there. It's because they're just checking in so that they can let it go. And that's the concept of reverse Pandora's box. So I hope that's helpful. I hope that that gives you some language to use with parents. And as you're talking about termination and wrapping up, and or if parents see regressive behavior and it's concerning to them, help them understand the idea that a child will never start over where they were before. It's impossible. So hope that that encourages you. Hope that that's helpful. If you want to reach out to me, I'd love to hear from you. Brenna@thekidcounselor.com. You can also call the call-in line if you want to leave a message, and I can answer your question that way. 813-812-5525. Super grateful for you all. I started my new Play Therapy Professional certified groups today. So 12 new participants in this round of training. And it was just so exciting to see the passion and the drive and the investment and what an incredible journey this is going to be for them. I'm actually going to be wrapping up with one of my year-long coaching groups in about 8 weeks or so. So, oh my gosh, so many exciting things happening in the world of child-centered play therapy. And you all, actually, this is a related aside, but I want you all to know how much I appreciate you. Eric and I were talking on the way to dinner today, and I was talking about just kind of my realization of how everything has changed in the last few years and the way my career has pivoted. And just, I was just really celebrating and really grateful and appreciative for all of the things that have happened, and really a lot of them unexpected and huge surprises for me, but such pleasant surprises. So we were just kind of dialoguing about that, and I don't know how many of you all know this, but I have a cloud tattoo on my wrist, and it's from a verse in 1 Kings where the servant keeps going to look for a cloud because they've been in a drought and there's no rain. And so he keeps sending his servant to check to see if there's rain coming, and he keeps coming back and saying no. But on the 7th visit to the mountain, he comes back and says, it's the size of a man's hand, but there is a cloud. And so the concept of that and why I got that tattooed on my wrist is that sometimes we don't see what's coming and we don't know what's in store. We can't anticipate the future, but we can trust that there is a cloud. And even when there's no evidence of the things that we need, it's usually on its way. And, you know, my belief is that that's God's providence in our lives, but I wanted to represent that on my wrist as a tattoo so that I saw it every day. Anyway, so we were talking about my tattoo and there is a cloud and how my career has changed in the last couple of years and being able to connect with therapists and you all around the world and all of you who have overwhelmed me with requests for coaching and training and supervision. And oh my gosh, the collective was birthed out of this and the coaching programs were birthed out of this. And so Eric and I were just kind of weighing all that and tossing all that around. And he said, don't ever lose sight of your podcast audience because they're where it all began. And I'm sure you hear my emotion, but I want you to know that none of what I do would be part of my life without you all. So I hope you truly know when I say I'm grateful for you, and I say it all the time, and I know you're probably sick of it, but it is the most truthful, honest, genuine, true, deep felt thing that I could say to you. You all are the start of all of this for me. You supporting this podcast and loving this podcast and listening to this podcast. Some of you have binge listened to every single episode in like a 6-week period, which I can't even believe that you could do that. Some of you listen to me on like 1.75 speed so that you can listen to 3 or 4 at a time. And the stories you tell me about how invested you are and how much this has meant to you and how much you've learned from it and gained from it and the support you've given me, the encouragement you've sent me, the emails and the reaching out and the touching base and the flowers and the gifts that you sent me on my birthday. I mean, I really can't tell you what that has meant for me and my career. And so I just wanted to say a huge thank you to you. Eric said, don't ever lose sight of your podcast audience being the start of all of this. And it's true. And I wanted you to hear me say that. So I'm super grateful and I really mean that. And I can't do what I do without each and every one of you. Thank you for recommending this podcast to your friends and to your coworkers and your colleagues. And gosh, it's incredible. And the impact and the reach that this has is so much bigger than what I thought it would ever be. And it just brings me back to there is a cloud, right? So anyway, I love you all so much. Thank you. And I hope you truly feel the depth of my gratitude because it's very, very real to me. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks. For more episodes and resources, please go to www.playtherapypodcast.com.